Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our day forum, dealing with the emotion with Ajahn Brahm. Okay. Too many of us, I'm sure you have met or have heard about Ajahn Brahm before. But for those who may not have heard about him, may I give a small brief information regarding Ajahn Brahm. From the way he looked, not long ago, he was born in London. And then, graduated from Cambridge University, obtained a degree of theoretical physics. Teaching for a while, then pursued his interest, became ordained to a Buddhist monk in Thailand with a forest temple under the guidance of Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah was a very famous in the Buddhist society in Theravada. Okay, and then in 1983, Ajahn Brahm went to Australia and helped establish a monastery, Buddhist monastery, which is nowadays the Eastern Den that is in Perth. Most of the time, Ajahn Brahm is flying around the world, and his schedule is always very tight. This time, he will be here in Hong Kong from 25th until the 8th of March. Many busy schedule, however, it's very kind of him to allow us some the slot of his time today. So last year when he was here, he had promised that he would be here every time, every year then he comes to Hong Kong, he will keep us one day, which is very kind of him.
Did I say that?
You did.
Me and my big mouth.
I remember many things and I have practiced it. Especially one thing that I always use when I encounter some decision making or tough decision was good, bad, news. Then, just like to share with you one little thing. Each encounter has always been very, very good learning from him. One was yesterday when he arrived, Ajahn Brahm was supposed to arrive, Hong Kong SQ flight, sorry to say SQ flight,
yeah.
Around 5:15, 5:30. So a group of us arranged and really gear up to meet him. Things has been arranged to welcome him at the airport and everything. And then at 2:30, two of us received a call to say that Ajahn Brahm is now sitting, waiting, meditating at the airport, Hong Kong, and jumped out of our seat. Both of us rushed to the airport. As we were running and running and running, we can spot the orange color road there. And then as we approached by Ajahn Brahm, with very kind smile, he goes like. And then the two of us approached him. Later on, Ajahn Brahm told us that flight has changed. Anyway, the point was, Ajahn Brahm said, today's topic was managing surprise. So we learned and everything. Well, without further ado, may I please ask you all to welcome Ajahn Brahm with a round of applause.
Thank you. I do practice what I preach. I do walk the talk, as they say. And I remember just going to a charity function in Singapore. There was a minister who was attending. And it was like a charity walk to raise funds for a good cause. And when the minister gave his talk, I asked him afterwards, are you going on the walk as well? He said, no, I'm too busy. And so just like an ordinary politician, you talk the walk, but you never walk the talk. So all he ever did was talk and then he went. But I walked afterwards. So it's important that what you say, you practice. And the reason why you practice it is because all the stuff which I'm going to say today, the stuff which I said before, is all practical. It does work. It does change people's lives for the better. So it's very, very practical and effective teachings. And it's so effective, I was telling someone earlier, that last November, when I was in Toronto, I do travel many, many places, one of the invitations was to Toronto University to give a lecture which was part of the course, would be credited for and examined on, is the connection with Buddhism, psychology and meditation. because they knew that some of these ideas and teachings which we have, which are non-religious, they go across the board for everybody, and that they do actually help solving many of the problems, especially of the emotional problems in today's world, and they're so effective. That's why they asked me to contribute as part of the university course. So, and I've also noticed that many of the stuff which I've been teaching and other monks and nuns have been teaching now are basic psychology. They actually work. And today's topic is just how to deal with emotions, and especially some of the negative emotions which people have had to experience in the past, and the anxieties they have for the future. And the first story, when I first taught this to a psychology group in Sydney, they were so impressed, they all wrote it down so that they could teach that in their workplace to their clients. And I was really disappointed with those psychologists. They got the story from me, but they never gave me any royalties. But please excuse me, did I teach that the last time I was here? Because I've been many, many places since last year. That was a two chicken farm story. Okay, because I just taught this to someone recently, earlier today. And it really does explain and help people let go with some of the emotional baggage of the past. And this was a story adapted from something Ajahn Chah said many years ago. And the story begins with two chicken farmers. And the first chicken farmer gets up early in the morning to collect the produce of his chickens from the night before. And he takes the basket and enters the chicken shed, and he fills his basket full of chicken shit. Now the poo, the little balls of excrement. And he leaves the eggs in the shed to rot. And he brings the shit back into the house, where it makes a big stink and is very unpopular with his family. That's the first chicken farmer, the stupid one. The second chicken farmer goes into the shed with the basket to collect the produce of the night before, and he fills the basket full of eggs. He leaves the shit in the shed to rot. It will become valuable fertilizer later on, but you don't bring it back into the house with you. You leave it in the shed. You bring the eggs back into the house, where you can make a wonderful omelette for your family and sell the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That's the smart chicken farmer. And the meaning of that story is this. When you collect the produce of your past, when you remember all the things which happened to you today, last week, so far in your life, what do you put in your basket and bring home with you? Are you a shit collector or an egg collector? And I guarantee that 90% of you are shit collectors, aren't you? Be honest. What do you tell your partner when you get home? Do you tell them all the wonderful things which happened today? Or do you tell them all the things which went wrong? When you remember your past, what do you remember? All the things which went wrong. When you go to divorce lawyer, what do you remember? All the things which went wrong. That's the trouble with human beings. We so focus on mistakes and what went wrong, that's all we collect, that's what we put in our basket and bring home with us, that causes us the emotions of anger and guilt. That means I can't stay with you any longer, darling, because you've collected so much shit in your life, that's all you remember. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we did let the mistakes rot in the past and instead we collected and remembered all the wonderful things which we've shared with our partner over the years? And all the mistakes, sort of forget them. We remember all the wonderful things. We collect eggs. Then you'll find you'll have a happy relationship and a wonderful time together. And also, whatever's happened to you in your own life, all the difficulties, sometimes it's abuse, sometimes it's disappointment, sometimes mistakes, sometimes tragedies. Why do we always remember that? A similar story is of a photo album. You probably have got photo albums in your house, if not actually solid ones. You've got them on the internet. You know, photographs of your holidays, photographs of your wedding, photographs of your favorite mug. You know, photographs of your kids. These are the photographs which we keep. How many of you take photographs of when you're in the hospital, sick? How many of you take photographs when you go to work on a Monday morning? Here's me, stuck in the Hong Kong traffic, going to work. How many, you got photographs of your wedding. How many of you have photographs of your divorce? Your photograph. You don't have any unpleasant, unhappy photographs, do you? You only keep the happy ones. Why do you do that? It's because when you look at those old photographs, that brings back happy memories. It gives you a boost of positive emotions, it encourages you, it makes you feel happy, and means you're healthier, more motivated, and more successful in your life. We use that for photo albums. We've got another photo album between our ears, and that's our memories. Why on earth do we keep so many negative memories in our heart? Really, we should delete them all and only keep the happy memories. That is how we become emotionally mature and wise, choosing the positive experiences of the past and letting all the negative ones disappear. When I first started teaching like this in a business school, people said, no, 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 you have to keep remembering the past. If you don't learn from the past, you'll keep repeating the mistakes. That is old wisdom which does not work. Instead of remembering what went wrong, in business you should remember what went right. Because what happens, something goes wrong in the company, something goes wrong on the flight, and you have to have a debriefing and find out who was at fault. That's negativity. And what happens afterwards? Yeah, you might find out the mistake, but everyone gets unmotivated, they get depressed, they start to blame, and that's very toxic for any business environment. Imagine what would happen if there was a mistake, something went wrong, you made a wrong choice, you just let it go. But when things went right, the company had a really good year, your marriage had a wonderful day today, whatever happened, it was a beautiful day. Why don't we stop and learn from that? Why did we have a wonderful day today, you know, between you and your partner? What was special about today? You just had a great time together. Why was it that this year we did a lot of profits? Then when you learn from successes rather than mistakes, you learn the secret of what works. What causes a happy relationship? What causes a profitable company? What causes like a healthy body? Instead of taking it for granted. Not only do you learn the causes of success, but also it's a greater motivator when you talk about things which went right. People get inspired. They get encouraged. They get energized. So they go out of the meetings feeling more motivation to work harder and to repeat the causes of success which worked. So instead of focusing on mistakes, which just cause anger, guilt, negativity, depression, you know, bad company morale, when we focus on mistakes, that's what happens. So let that rot in the past. And for successes, focus on them. Keep on looking at them, keep on talking about them, keep on analysing them until we become experts in what works. That motivates us and we obviously we become happier
and even more successful in the future. Don't be ship collectors in Cathay Pacific. Be egg collectors, and you'll have a far happier life. But sometimes things do go wrong. And I've been teaching the last year, I hope I didn't say this last year, the 70% rule. Now I got this for the time when I was a school teacher. Before I became a monk, I worked in a high school for 12 months. Anyone who's taught teenagers would consider leaving the world and becoming a monk. It's bad enough having them in your house in the evening. Imagine them having for 8 hours in school, and a lot of them where you're totally outnumbered. So, after teaching school for a year, not all kids are like that, there's some really wonderful kids like Michael sitting in front of me now. But I had to set an examination in mathematics. That was part of your job. And I've never set a test in maths before. So I went to a senior teacher and asked, what should I do? Give me some advice. And the senior teacher said, make sure you don't set the test or make the test too difficult, nor too easy. If it is so difficult that the average score is, say, 30%, 40%, then that will be discouraging all your students in the class. They'll all go away saying, maths is too hard, and they won't want to do it again. But if you make it too easy, so they'll get 10 out of 10 or 9 out of 10, they learn nothing at all. So he told me, see if you can set the average score to being 70%, 7 out of 10. And that means that everybody gets encouraged, they're motivated, yeah, I can do maths. But the 30% where they make mistakes, that's where I, as their teacher, can find out their weak points, the parts of my lesson which they didn't get, which they didn't understand, so I can address those weak points in my next lesson. And that was a wonderful piece of advice which I extended to life. If your life is only 50% or 40%, then you feel like you're a failure in life. And so you get depressed, dispirited, even suicidal. But even worse, if your life is 100% or 90%, everything goes right and you've never had any challenges or disappointments in your life. Basically, you learn nothing. So the best success rate in life is 70%. Not perfect, not imperfect, but just enough to motivate you. Yeah, you can do this. And the other 30% is where you learn about life. So from that general teaching, if you've got a wife who's only 70%, she's perfect. You can't get better than that. If she was 100%, it would make you feel so inferior, so incompetent, so undeserving. And the same with your husband. If you've got a husband who's 100%, dump him, you're learning nothing. And if he's only 40%, that's really depressing. If you've got one 70%, that is absolutely perfect, keep him. So I ask all of you who are married, is your husband 100%? Of course not. If he was, there'd be no point in being married. You'd have no growth at all, no learning. So if he is about 70%, not perfect, but 70%, keep him. And if your wife is the same, 70%, keep him. Because sometimes we set our standards so high with our partner in life. We want them to be so perfect. No man, no woman can live up to that, which is one of the reasons why we get separations and divorces. Because our expectations are far too high. We're asking for marriage what it can never give us. We're asking from a woman what she's not capable of delivering. And we're asking for a man what he just cannot do. That is one of the reasons why we have dissatisfaction in marriage. So please, in a relationship, lower your expectations. I tell this to young people these days, especially in Chinese culture. In Chinese culture, if you're a girl, never ever marry a rich boy. Because if your husband is rich and wealthy, he will be able to afford a mistress. And you will always be suspicious. But if he's poor, you know there's no way any mistress will go out with him. He can't afford anything. So you're safe. You'll never have any worries anymore in your life if you marry a poor boy. And it's the same boys. I encourage them, never marry a beautiful girl. If you marry a beautiful girl, so many other boys will lust her. So if you marry a beautiful girl, so many other boys would lust after that pretty girl. And again, you'll always be jealous. But if you marry an ugly girl, she's yours forever. No one else will even touch her. So you're safe. Your relationship is solid forever and ever. So I say that, and all of the ugly girls and poor boys say, yeah, yeah, thank you, Ajahn. And that also means you girls don't need to sort of work so hard trying to be pretty. You can take it easy and be sloppy. And then you become more attractive. So I was just like saying that because you can't get a perfect boy, you can't get a perfect girl. And that knowing your expectations is learning just how, I said this last night in the temple, how not to ask from life what it can never give you. That is the suffering of life. Asking from marriage what it can't give you. Asking from your partner what it can never give you. Asking from yourself what it can't give you. Asking from your company, or the company asking from you what it can never be given. You know how much suffering that is, don't you? So, when we realize what we can get, we actually do lower our expectations. And you have far less suffering and emotional turmoil in your life. I've told that story for a long time, and now apparently it's actually on one of those little bookmarks we're going to give out afterwards, but it's also on Harvard Business School blog, Advice for Companies, and they were pointing out quite correctly that one of the causes of the GFC, which affected our whole world, was that too many companies who had so high expectations which could not be met except through no fraudulent dealings. And that's the only way they could keep up the expectations demanded of them, causing a huge economic problem in our world. So modern business, and this is, you know, I don't know if you've heard about this in Cathay Pacific. Now Harvard Business School is one of the leading business schools in our world, and that's now on their blog. Lower your expectations, and that came from yours truly. So you get in Cathay Pacific before it actually gets to Harvard Business School. You're ahead of the curve, well done. But you can see why. So as for what happens in the past, don't be a shit collector, be an egg collector, but someone was asking me just at lunchtime, but it's easier said than done. How do I let go of this terrible guilt or this anger, this emotional negativity from what happened in the past to me? And the first method, again, which is now being introduced into modern psychology, coming again from yours truly. And when, again, I first said this, the psychologists were so impressed that they are now introducing it in Australia. Is whenever you have done something bad or had some trauma, something which is really bothering you from the past, the first thing you have to do is to admit it, to acknowledge it, bring it to the surface. Now that's standard psychology. And the best thing to do is to write it down. So I'm adding nothing new here, that's accepted. Write down what happened to you. But where my method differs is the sort of paper and pen you use to write down the terrible thing which happened to you. You write it down on a piece of toilet paper and you use brown ink. In other words, as you write down this terrible thing which happened to you, you lost your job, you didn't get the promotion, you know, your girlfriend sort of dumped you for somebody else, whatever it was, you write it down on a piece of toilet paper in brown ink, because that gives you the psychological association of the other brown stuff which usually goes on toilet paper. And once you have that association that this is not the sort of thing you keep, how many of you, after you go to the toilet, put the used piece of paper in your pockets or bags and take it with you to use afterwards, to recycle it, because you only use one side, you can use the other side later. You know, we've got to conserve. Now that's a great way for the Cathay Pacific to show they're environmentally sensitive. Please ask all of your workers to use both sides of the toilet paper. Then you can cut down the usage by half. You never do that, do you? What happens when you've got the dirty piece of toilet paper? It goes straight in the toilet bowl and flushed away. So, the association, when you write out the past, the things which are really bothering you on a piece of toilet paper, especially in brown ink, the association is that this is not what you must keep. You have to dispose of it. So you write it out in brown ink, you read it to yourself, and then you go to the toilets to do the letting go ceremony. You take it there, read it a third time, because you've got to really get it into the mind that this happened, it's true, but it's brown, it's shitty, I should not keep it. And you put it in the toilet bowl, and you press the button, it goes round and round and gone. You'd be surprised, and maybe not surprised, you're smart enough to know that with all of those associations, it's much easier to do the psychological letting go and not keep this anymore. The associations are so strong that you find it easier to dispose of that terrible thing which happened to you. It's not the sort of stuff you should keep, and you do actually let it go. And it vanishes, it disappears. And I've been teaching that, and it does actually work. It's much easier to, you know, people tell you, let it go, it's only a small thing, who cares? Let it go, but you have to do something. Just saying it, just thinking it, is not strong enough. In the same way, that's why we have marriage ceremonies. Marriage is not really when you sort of say, I'm going to commit. You've committed way before you go through that ceremony. But the ceremony reinforces the fact that you are committing to somebody. In the same way, a funeral ceremony. Yay, someone's dead. I've told many people, when I die, you don't need to do cremation or burial. Just put me in the recycling bin, which is collected from my monastery once a week. It's cheap and it gets recycled, you know, sort of whatever. So what do you need to do a ceremony for? Because funerals are so expensive. Are they expensive in Hong Kong? Would you have recycling bins? You know, where every week the local authority, you know, picks up the recycling material. You have those? Well, then when you're dead, just put it in recycling and they take it away and it's done. Very cheap, very efficient, no problem. Okay, you're not buying that one. But why do we do the ceremony? Because we have to do something more than putting you in a recycling bin to let go of a good relationship, to say goodbye to someone, to make sure there is, as they say, a moving on from the past. That's why we do have those funeral ceremonies. As an Australian, I can tell this joke. What's the difference between an Australian funeral and an Australian wedding? The difference is, at an Australian funeral, there's one less drunk person. It's okay to laugh. If you don't get it, if I have to explain it to you, you know, the one in the box isn't drunk, okay? Everyone else is. Okay, it's a very hard audience this afternoon. But no, so we have to do a ceremony, and that's why to let go of the past, it's great to do a ceremony to let go of the past. And if we can do that ceremony to let go of the past, it means we're free. But some of these emotions which really hurt us,
and stop us having a successful and happy life. You'll be surprised how many people don't allow themselves to be happy simply because they feel guilty. And this is again lacking the emotion of happiness simply because you don't think you deserve to be happy. Now this is a powerful thing, but it's absolutely true. I've learned a lot from teaching in prisons. I spent so much time teaching in prisons all around the world that I've kept a log of how much time I have spent volunteering in jails to be used as credit in case one day I'm sent to jail for something. I said, look, I've already done sort of 2 years, so I can take it off my sentence. But you know, as a monk, I wouldn't mind going to prison. Because if I went to prison, it's actually much more comfortable than a monastery where I live. Now, you actually get a bed to sleep on in prison. In monastery, I have to sleep on the floor. You can actually get 3 meals a day in prison, 4 even. They only give me 2 meals, a breakfast and a lunch as a monk. And I can have a nice time meditating all day. I don't have to give talks. No one actually rings me up to ask questions. It's amazing. No, in our monastery, people actually call the monastery. They want to speak to me to ask questions about all sorts of things. My husband, my wife, my career, the dog is sick, can you do some chanting? So we decided actually to put in an answer service. You know, like in Cathay Pacific, your call is important to us. But we have a special one. We say, if you want some chanting for good luck, press 1. So you have recorded chanting. If you want to speak to Ajahn Brahm, you're out of luck, so press number 1 for chanting anyway. That way we don't have to answer anything. That's only a joke, we don't have that, we're much kinder. But nevertheless, people ask for all sorts of stuff. Because it's much easier, if we can actually just teach people how to let go in the first place, so they don't have to keep bothering us. And you can do this just by letting go of the past, or rather letting go of the painful part of the past, keeping the happy part. Straight away, your emotional world gets much, much happier. You know what? It's such a sad thing to see people which I've done marriage services for them. Oh, I've just known them for years and years and years, and they're such good people. Why can't you actually like each other? And the simile which I get from prison really helps again. For years I've been going, teaching meditation in prison and just counselling there. And one day, I don't mind saying this, I got a very wonderful compliment from a prison officer. He called me and said, can you please come back to our prison to teach? I say, I'm too busy, I've got too many responsibilities, I'll send another monk. And the prison officer said, no, we want you. And I say, why me? And this prison officer then gave me one of the compliments I will take to my grave, or my recycling bin rather. And that was, he said, I've been a prison officer all my life, it's been my career, I will shortly retire the next year or so. Now I've noticed something very unique. Every prisoner who's ever come to your class never comes back to prison again after they're released. Oh, that really hit me deep in my heart. I've actually done something for many, many people. He said they go out into the world and they never reoffend. And I thought, what have I done? And I realized that what I've done is, every time I've been in those prisons, I've never ever seen a criminal. I've never seen a thief, a murderer, or a rapist. Never once have I seen any of those people. I've seen many people who had killed. I've seen people who had raped, people who had stolen, but I never saw a thief. I saw people who'd committed crimes, not criminals. If you understand the difference, you understand why my presence worked. Yes, they have stolen, they've killed
a couple of people, but does that make them a murderer? Or are they people who have killed? There is a huge difference there. If you think because they've stolen, then they're a thief, you'll never trust them again. They're always a thief for the rest of their life, which means that's the only thing they can ever do when they get released from jail. Steal again, because that's who they are. If you look at them, they're people who have stolen. But they've done so many other things in their life which they can respect, which they can feel happy about. You restore to them their sense of self-worth. And once they see that they are worthy human beings, they're people who have raped, but they're not rapists, then they never rape again. You know, I told that story in the Singapore mental health. It was a big campus. They were having some ceremony, 50 years or whatever, and they asked me to give a keynote address. At the end of that address, I told that story of how I never saw any criminals or thieves or murderers, just people who had stolen, people who had committed crimes. And that's how they never went back to jail again. And this doctor, this professor of psychiatry, asked me to come and visit his unit, which was the schizophrenia unit. I don't know if any of you know a family member or friend who suffers from schizophrenia. But it's one of the most terrible diseases, because if you break a leg or you're deformed, you can see that, and you get a lot of sympathy. But if it's a mental disease, no one can ever see that. You look the normal like everybody else. So you don't get much sympathy. But you behave in such a way that people find it very hard to deal with you. You're crazy, and it takes so much energy and time from you, you just want to get rid of them. Schizophrenia is a terrible disease, and I don't know why, but it seems to be increasing in our modern world, and I'm sure that everyone here has seen someone who has suffered that terrible disease. So I was very interested, actually, to see his unit. And I asked him, how do you treat schizophrenia in your unit? And then he said again something I'll never forget. He said, just like you've been teaching, Ajahn Brahm, we don't treat schizophrenia in the schizophrenic unit. We treat the other part of the patient. And as soon as I heard that, again, I get emotional when I hear myself saying this. I was just so pleased that at last somebody in power understands. And I actually put my hands up as an act of worship to this guy because of what he just said. He treats the other part of the patient, the part which is not schizophrenic. There is not such a thing as a schizophrenic person. There's a person who has episodes of schizophrenia. They're a person, there's another part to them. And if you treat that other part to them, that is what grows. When I saw those prisoners and treated the other part of them, the wonderful, good part, not the thing which created the crime, the other part of them, then that was the part which grew, which meant that when they got released, they would never do that crime again. When this psychiatrist, professor, treated the other part of these people who suffered episodes of schizophrenia, that was the part which grew, which got stronger. It literally squashed the schizophrenia out. I asked him what his results were, and he said, far, far better than all the other conventional treatments. Now, I mean, that really meant something to me, because again, you are helping, well, that guy was helping really solid emotional problems in our world. You know, the effects of schizophrenia. My goodness, it was working. And how does that relate to you? Why do you keep treating the negative part of life? Focusing on that. How about treating the other part? There's not crimes. There's people who commit those crimes. They're people. Never think of your partner as you're lazy. There's no such thing as a lazy husband. there's a husband who is sometimes lazy. There's no such thing as an angry wife, a grumpy wife. It's just a wife who sometimes goes through grumpy periods. But if you focus on that, that's what grows, and you find the problem gets worse. You're really in emotional turmoil. If you focus on the other part, the part of your partner which you really respect and love, then that part is going to grow. Which brings me on to this woman in, I think she's in the Australian National University in Canberra. She was a psychologist who, for her PhD thesis, was investigating the psychology of training dolphins in water parks. You may have seen these dolphins who can jump through hoops, they can play like water polo, and they can do all sorts of amazing tricks. So her subject for her PhD thesis was how you train dolphins in a water park. And soon she learned from the trainers that how you train dolphins is that when they jump, say, an inch higher, you throw them a fish. You give them a reward. When they don't perform, you never punish them. You leave them alone. But when they jump another inch, another fish. That's how you teach or train dolphins to perform these amazing feats. No punishment, just rewards. And this particular student had this wonderful insight. She went to her professor and asked to change the subject of her thesis from how to train dolphins to how to train husbands. And that's why her thesis got these top marks. She got her doctorate, and that thesis was published in many magazines where I read it. So all of you girls who've got a husband and you want to know how to train him, use the dolphin method. It works. And the dolphin method is when he irritates you and just does all the things which you don't like, never scold him, don't punish him at all. But when he does something you like, you know, he comes home early or gets you a Valentine's Day gift. Did your husband get you a Valentine's Day gift a couple of weeks ago? Oh dear. I remember this one story of a really good husband. He asked his wife a couple of days before Valentine's Day, "Do you want a present, darling?" And she said, no, we don't need that. Husbands, if he says that, that's not what she means. Of course she wants something. I'm a monk, I can understand wives. So she asked, he said, "No, darling, no, what do you want? I'm going to buy you something, what do you want?" I said, "Okay, thank you, darling." You know, we're rich enough now, something with diamonds in. You know, girls love diamonds. So it's very good. He got her a gift with diamonds in. When she opened up the package on Valentine's Day, she was so happy. She knew there was diamonds in it somewhere. And what he actually got her was a pack of playing cards. That was the big one. Then it was divorce afterwards. Had 13 diamonds. So if you want to have a happy relationship, next Valentine's Day, give your wife a little package. Say, "Diamonds, darling." The pack of playing cards. Anyway, back to sensibility. So the learning just how to train a husband is when he does something you like, give him a reward. Remember this wife, she gave this example. Her husband, she was working, he was working, and every morning he could never find his clothes. "Darling, darling, darling, where's my sock?" And she would always have to stop what she was doing to help her stupid husband find out where he put his socks. "Darling, darling, have you seen my red tie?" And so every morning she had to again find his red tie for him. And it was driving her crazy. In married life, it's those small things which really irritate him. So she decided to try the dolphin method. Every time he said, "Darling, darling, have you seen that shirt of mine?" She would totally ignore him. She wouldn't scold him or say anything or help him. And when he found it himself, as he always did, then she would stop what she was doing. She'd come up and say, "Oh, well done, darling. Give him a big smooch." You know that worked? She said, "Now he finds everything for himself." That's called throwing him the fish. Smooch, smooch. Whatever else it is. That's actually how you train husbands, how you train anybody. And that way you have an emotional happiness, and all these terrible emotions which we have, which cause us problems, they just disappear. But we also have the emotions of anxiety. I mean, severe anxiety, like panic attacks. And I'd like to tell this story again, because this was just a powerful story of someone with extreme anxiety. Probably the most extreme anxiety I have seen or heard about, because I never actually saw it, but I kept on calling her. A young girl, she was studying dentistry in Adelaide University. She got so depressed and anxious, she literally could not get out of her room, her bedroom. And she was in that bed most of the day. The GP and the psychologist at the university, which was available for free, could not help her. She was getting worse and worse. Every time she got out of her room, she was crippled by this terrible anxiety and panic attacks. And if any of you have ever had a panic attack, you know it can come up any time, totally unexpected, and you're totally disabled. It's out of control, very embarrassing. You freeze. But she was fortunate. Her uncle was a strong supporter of mine, so the uncle told her to give me a call. And this is what happened. I sort of asked her, "When you feel that panic attack," I said, "where do you feel it in your body?" And she said, "What do you mean in my body?" I said, "A panic attack." I said, "Somewhere in your body there'll be a counterpart physical sensation." So, and she said, "I don't know." I said, "Give me a call in 3 days when you find out." I had given her something to do. This is really important when you help somebody. Don't do it for them. They have to contribute to any therapy, any sort of recovery. 3 days later, she called me back and said when she had these panic attacks, she felt it in her chest. And I said, "Exactly where?" And she sort of gave me that description, exactly where it was. I said, "Wonderful. Now can you please describe that feeling to me?" I said, "No, I can't, it's just tension, that's all." I said, "That's not good enough. I want a very detailed description of that feeling." I'd given her something more to do. 3 days later, she called back again. And I was very impressed. She gave a very detailed description of the feelings, the pains, the tension, the tightness, the burning, which actually occurred in her chest when she had a panic attack. For those of you, you know, who know about meditation, this is called establishing mindfulness. Being aware of what's going on in your body. Once she had understood that feeling, then I said, "Now every time that feeling starts to arise, I want you to get your hand and start massaging that area of the body. If you can't do it, get your boyfriend to do it for you. That's what boyfriends are there for." And she did that. And 3 days later, she called again and said, "I've been following the instructions. Every time I have these recurrent panic attacks, I massage the area." So what happens to the feeling? "Oh, it goes away. The feeling of tension in the chest goes away." And then I said, "And what happened to the anxiety?" And I'll never forget the response. There was a pause. And it was one of those light bulb moments, as they say. And then she said, "The anxiety went away too." I said, "Well done. Now you know how to overcome your anxiety." Don't try and deal with that emotion on the mental level. All these emotions have a counterpart physical feeling in your body somewhere. Get to know that physical feeling, first of all. Be so aware of it, you can describe it in detail to a stranger. Don't just say it's tense, that's not good enough. I want a detailed description. That means you've been aware of it. Then massage it with kindness, with compassion, whatever it is, to soften that feeling. We know how to relax the body much more than we know how to relax the mind. And when she massaged that area, the pain, the tension disappeared, and with it, the cause, the anxiety in her emotional world disappeared as well. within about a month, no, a couple of weeks, she was out of bed, within a month, back to lectures, and that girl, Jippy, she managed to get first class honours. And that boyfriend, who helped her massage sometimes, proposed to her, and I performed the marriage for both of them. A very happy ending. And she did some special course, about 100 people applied for a special course in dentistry, only 3 got in Sydney University, she was one of them. A really successful, beautiful girl. And there you go, you take a person from bed, totally disabled, probably be in an institution, and take her and give her a life. That is how you deal with emotional problems. If you're angry, if you're depressed, if you're anxious, whatever negative emotion you have in your life, it's so hard to deal with on an emotional level. We're not skilled enough for that, unless you're monks who meditated all their life. But you always have a physical. If you're really upset and angry, or if you're going into some interview and you always get panic, you know, you're too scared, find out where you feel that in your body. And then get your hand and just massage it away. Massage it until it disappears, and you find your panic disappears as well. Because those two, the emotional and the physical, are always connected. When one goes, the other one goes. And that became such a powerful way to deal with these negative emotions which sometimes disable people. You get people who are great on the sort of the tennis courts in practice, they have a match and they get so nervous, they tense up, they keep losing. You get your kids who are great in sort of chemistry, but they get the exam, they get so afraid, they blow the exam and they don't get the good place in university. Simply because they don't know how to deal with the emotion of panic, with fear. And this is actually how you can deal with it, in a very effective way. And again, that too, I told all the psychologists, I don't know why I do this, because they're making all the money. They never give me any donations for figuring these things out in the first place. But anyway, we're not in it for money, we're just in it for solving the problems of the world and making people happier, letting go of their emotions. Now, I haven't actually mentioned the positive emotions. Somebody asked me today that when they were meditating, sometimes they feel like crying, and they're so embarrassed when they feel like crying. Well, then what's wrong with crying? It's a wonderful thing to cry at any time, at any place. So I threatened this lady. I said, if you don't cry soon, I'm going to give you a crying license. Just like you get a driving license and a marriage license and license to keep a dog, I will grant you a crying license, which means you have a license on nice embodied, embossed letterhead. I hereby grant, you know, the name of the person underneath, permission to cry at any time for any reason or no reason at all for the rest of their life. Signed, Ajahn Brahm. And they do that because sometimes people think they need permission to do these things. In other words, we're so afraid what other people think of us that we can't just let these positive emotions come out. I still remember this man who came on one of my retreats, and he just, because I was teaching him just to let go, just to keep a positive mind, he burst into tears on one meditation. And he came up afterwards and said he hadn't cried for 20 years. That long. Just how much of a relief it was just to let those tears flow. He was a man, an Australian. Australian men are not supposed to cry. But of course, men are not that different than women. You know, I'm in the middle between the two of you, so I know everything. I'm not gay, but you know, in Thailand, you know, in Thai they have the three genders, Pek Ying, Pek Chai, and Samanapet. Samanapet means monks and nuns. Yeah, Samanapet, yeah. So actually we're the third gender. So that way you can really get to understand women as a monk. You can really get to understand and getting the heads of a man. So you understand that men like crying as well. So why not? It's emotionally wonderful to cry. So sometimes men, boys, whatever, you have permission to cry. Healthy, positive for your emotions and your well-being. So if a boy ever cries, please support him and encourage him. He needs to do it, as much as girls need to do it as well. Never be embarrassed about expressing your emotions, especially those positive emotions. Sometimes you get so inspired. Those inspires are like of love, the inspires of inspiration. You see and hear something which is beautiful, which is wonderful. Why not cry? You're encouraging the positive emotions in life. And if you encourage the positive emotions, you know, joy, laughter, happiness, inspiration, you find that also starts to crowd out the negative emotions. If you grow flowers, there's no space for weeds. So if you grow the positive emotions in life, the laughter, the joy, you know, the happiness, which you don't need to be afraid of. It's amazing that sometimes I tell jokes, and sometimes they're really funny jokes. But sometimes people refuse to laugh. I'm not going to laugh just because a monk tells a joke. Did I tell the joke about the two carrots last time? Two carrots. Okay, here we go. Look, this is really one of my favorite funny jokes. There were two carrots walking down, you know, the center of Hong Kong one afternoon. And one of the carrots got hit by a car, a crazy drunk driver, and got very badly injured. His other carrot got on the mobile phone, called the ambulance. The ambulance service in Hong Kong is pretty good. Was it 999? Called 999, an ambulance came within a couple of minutes, took one look at the injured carrot, and realized that they have to take him to hospital. It was really serious. So they put the carrot, you know, on the gurney, you know, into the ambulance, and his friend went with him in the ambulance. They rushed to the general hospital, straight into the triage where the nurses have one look at you and say, this is serious, went straight into the surgery, the emergency surgery. It was literally a matter of life and death. And if ever you've been in such a situation, in the waiting room of the emergency room of the hospital, it's one of the tensest places in the world. You know, family members are waiting to see the news of their loved ones, and they know they're on the edge. It could be life, it could be death. And they're just praying and hoping that the doctor won't come and say, I'm sorry. But this time, after 2 hours, this carrot was waiting in the waiting room, waiting for news of his best friend. And the doctor came out and said, I've got good news and bad news for you. The good news is your friend, Mr. Carrot, he's going to live, he's going to survive, you're going to keep him alive. The bad news is, because of his injuries, he's going to be a vegetable for the rest of his life. That's a terrible joke, but I love that one. So it's okay to laugh, and let's laugh loudly. I gave you permission to do so. So when you laugh, you're actually creating positive emotions. The more you laugh, and look, it's hard in Singapore. You don't laugh easy enough. So look, I'm going to give you a little exercise to make you laugh a little bit more, to increase your positive emotions. Now I want you to get your two fingers and put them on the side of your mouth. Okay, push up. One, two, three. Do 20 push-ups every morning. Strengthen those muscles so you can smile more. Look, you know, if you want to sort of play soccer or play tennis, you've got to strengthen the muscles. You've got to go to the gym, first of all. So strengthen these muscles as well in front of the mirror. 20 push-ups every morning. One, two, three, four. And strengthen the smiling, happy muscles. You can see straight away, when you develop the positive emotions, deliberately, take the opportunity to smile, to laugh, to see the funny side, to see the joyful part of life, this is one of the things I learned as a school teacher, because as a school teacher, you're in front of about 20, 30 kids, and if you make a mistake, a slightest mistake, all the children in the class will start laughing to try and embarrass you. One of the first pieces of advice I was given, if you make a fool of yourself and people start laughing, you laugh as well. And that way the world never laughs at you, it only laughs with you. And I thought it was a wonderful piece of advice. You make a fool of yourself, you laugh as well. Then the world never laughs at you, it only laughs with you. What a beautiful life that is. So always take the opportunity, you know, to develop the positive emotions. The positive emotions of inspiration, you know, of love. Don't hold back your love. It doesn't matter if, you know, you've been hurt. That's no excuse not to show your love to other people. Love does make you vulnerable, but it's important to be able to practice it, and practice it well. And I better finish off soon. The only way to do that, and the secret of the emotional joy of a relationship. If you want to know the secret, Max knows all these secrets. Whenever you're about to get married, or rather at the ceremony, I look at, usually the bride first of all. As I look at the bride, I tell her, from this moment on, you are a married woman. You must not think of yourself anymore. And in Australia, all the women, they nod very sweetly, yes, I'm married now, I won't think of myself. Then I look at the guy, the Australian guy, and say, from this moment on, you're a married man. You mustn't think of yourself either. Now, I don't know what it is with guys. They always pause for a few seconds, first of all. They do. I'm being honest, it's just anecdotally correct. But they always say, yes, okay, I won't think of myself. They do agree, after a bit of coercion. It's true, I'm sorry. But then afterwards, so I'm still looking at the new married guy, and saying, from this moment on, you must not think of her, your wife. And I look quickly at the wife, from this moment on, you must not think of him. This is called teaching through confusion. Because when you're confused, you really pay attention. You really want to know what the answer is. So from this moment on, you must not think of yourself, nor must you think of your partner. From this moment on, you must only think of us. It's a totally different perspective. It's not about me anymore. It's not about him or her. It's about us. And that changes a whole emotional dynamic of a relationship. It means if there's any problem, whose problem is it? It's not his problem anymore. It's not her problem. It's not my problem. It is our problem. That's the secret of a happy marriage. It's about us. Any problem is our problem. If it's his problem, or her problem, or my problem, you've lost the plot. The marriage is not going to be successful. You're not in it together. And it's amazing the amount of solutions you can find if you say it's our problem, rather than passing the buck off to somebody else or thinking that it's your fault. So this is how we develop the beautiful emotions. And even though I'm a monk, I'm really happy when you see couples who really make it, who really develop that beautiful selflessness. They disappear into the relationship. It becomes about us. That is one of the positive emotions in life. And once you learn that trick, you have a wonderful time with your partner, with your children, and with your friends. It's never about me anymore. It's never about them. It's always about us. And that's a very great secret to an emotional, happy life. So I think I've spoken enough for the time being. Now is the time for the three C's: questions, comments, and complaints. Not really C's, but anyway. So, has anybody got any comments or compliments or complaints? Actually, usually any complaints usually goes to, you know, the MC. Any compliments comes to me.
Curious if you're writing any book lately, and if when it's going to be published.
Well, I've already published many books on meditation and small little books,
The most popular book was that book, Opening the Door of Your Heart. The American version was called, Who Ordered This Truckload of Dung? I really tried to get them to call it Who Ordered This Truckload of Shit, but in the United States, they just would not do that. They're just so conservative, but or puritanical or whatever you call it. But to give you some advance notice, Opening the Door of Your Heart, number 2, is coming soon.
I have a question. And if this is not the auditorium of Cathay Pacific, if this is your monetary and you're teaching your monk students, what would you have said about emotion?
About abortion?
Emotion.
Emotion, okay.
I don't mind you want to talk about abortion.
Yeah, okay. No, I just got some questions the other day, so it's fresh in my mind. And it is. Number one with abortion, look, that's not something which a man can tell a woman about. Most people who say it's right or wrong are men who've probably never been married, who don't know what they're talking about, who lay all this guilt trip on women. And I really get offended about how women are treated when it comes to such matters like abortion. Basically, whether it's a pope, whether it's a monk like me, whether it's an archbishop in church or an imam, they're all male. Do they really understand what a woman goes through when they have to make that choice? But they make the rules which women have to follow. That is not right. So if any of you have gone through an abortion, please do not feel guilty. It's us men which should feel guilty for putting you in that position in the first place and also not supporting you in making this toughest decision in your life. Basically, my position is, I will love you beforehand, I will love you afterwards, I will not criticize you. My job is to support you and take away the worst part, which is the guilt which women feel for years afterwards. That is the biggest crime. And it's usually, and I can say this because I'm a man, it's man-imposed. And you poor women. So anyway, that's with abortion. That's one of the things I try to fight for, to make sure it's obviously, you don't want to go around killing all the babies, but make sure it's done properly. It's basically you make the proper decision, not coerced, not through fear. Get all the information. If you do have to, please be careful next time. So, you learn from the mistakes. It's a rotten thing to have to do, but sometimes you have to do it. And next time, but you'll always be supported and loved by men, instead of made to feel just worse than a murderer. You're not a murderer. And as far as sort of talking to the monks about emotions, exactly the same. Negative emotions, please drop them. No anger, no guilt. Why on earth do people feel guilty for? In Buddhism, we don't have punishment. And in life, we should not have punishment. Because another thing with punishment, I was always wondering, why it is that husbands and wives lie to each other? Why children lie to their parents? And it happened a few years ago. A young girl, she's about 18 or 19, she came up to me. I've known her since she was, before she was born, basically, because, her family kept coming to the temple. As soon as the baby was born, I blessed her. So, growing up with her, she came up to me and said, Ajahn Brahm, I'm in big trouble. She said, I'm pregnant. I said, have you told your parents? She said, I can't tell my parents, they'll kill me. And she said, can you please tell my parents for me? It was really quite sweet, and I felt quite privileged doing that job for her. But I felt so sad that a girl who was in one of the most difficult times of her early adult years, felt afraid to tell her parents. And I realized that what is actually happening here is because parents punish their children too much and scold them and tell them off, when the time when your children really need you, they're afraid to tell you. Your son may be in trouble with drugs at school. Would they be able to tell you? Or would they be afraid?
If you're there afraid, there's something wrong. So please, with your children, please tell them with sincerity, son, daughter, you can tell me anything. As long as you're telling the truth, I will never scold or punish you. As a parent, I'm here to help you. So if you do get into trouble, which children do get into trouble, you can come and tell mum and dad the people you need the most, who can help you the most, so you don't have to face this problem alone. But if they're afraid of you, they're afraid of being punished, they won't tell you. And that's such a shame. The same with husbands and wives. The last year I've been enforcing this in the marriage ceremonies I performed. Tell each other, as long as you tell me the truth, partner, I will never scold or punish you. There will be no punishment at all, as long as it's the truth. Can you please understand, there's one person in this world you can tell anything to, even the most embarrassing secrets, even things you've done which may hurt me. Please tell me, because I'm your partner. What a wonderful thing that would be if you could tell the one you love the most, the one you've chosen to live your life with, without fear. It is punishment which drives the truth underground. It is the fear of punishment which stops children sharing the things they really need to tell their parents. So if we can establish the importance and value of truthfulness and honesty so high, higher than anything else, if your husband said, darling, look, I'm terribly sorry that this girl in the office, I kissed her, I haven't gone any further, that's all. And wife, you don't punish him. Don't scold him. It hurts you, yes. Thank you so much for telling me that. Because he's telling you that because he needs help. He needs help to make sure that it doesn't go any further. If he's got a wife who can understand and values truthfulness so much, I'm not a perfect husband, but I'm trying. I want this relationship with my wife to be strong. And I need to share that with you. I know it hurts you. It's so embarrassing. I wish I hadn't done that, but I lost it. Wives, could you accept that? It'd be wonderful if you could. Then your relationship is going to another level. A level that honesty, truthfulness is valued so highly that it trumps, is more important than everything else. So you never scold a partner as long as he tells the truth. If they lie, yes, scold him, shout him, hit him with a frying pan, I don't know what. But they don't do that anymore. But at least you value honesty so much. And please tell your children that. Because children feel so alone when they're in trouble. Fortunately, that girl had a monk to go to she could trust. She knew I would never, ever, ever punish her or make her feel diminished or feel bad in any way. So she could actually open up to me, yeah, I'm pregnant, I made a big mistake with my boyfriend. Great, thank you. It meant so much to her, she could share the problem with me. But I was so disappointed, she had to come to me and not tell her parents. So it's a wake-up call for parents, and for husbands and wives as well. Honesty is the most important. I don't know how I got onto that subject, but anyway, it's important. Another question or comment? How's the time going? Are we running out of time? Almost. Yeah, funny. But anyway, so that's how I teach my monks as well. So I tell my monks in monastery and my nuns, you're allowed to make mistakes. You don't have to be perfect. 70% is good enough. Because that means you do make a mistake, you confess, you let people know, and you learn from it, you grow from it. So there's no punishment, but total rehabilitation, growth and learning. Yeah?
I want to ask something about infidelity. I have a friend who came up to me and asked me to give her some guidance regarding her infidelity with her husband.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure what to say, but I accepted her and because she's my family member.
Yeah.
So I know she's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And I want to be
supportive of her, yeah. I mean, the thing is that because she's told you of her infidelity, it means she trusts you, she wants some help. In other words, she probably wants the relationship with her husband to continue. Is that the case? Or she's had it with her husband? Okay. Because you know, she needs to open up and know what her feelings are. Now, if she really wants to be with her husband, it's usually the case that she'll tell you that because she's asking for help from someone she trusts. But now I'm in trouble, I just really want to have a solid relationship with my husband. So, you know, the first thing to do is, it's a shame the relationship has got that far, she can't share everything with her husband. She's afraid to tell him. If she hadn't been so afraid to tell him in the early stages, look, there's a guy at the office, this guy I met, I really like him. Now, if you can tell people, your husband early on in a relationship, it's so easy to fix. But when it gets to the part she has been unfaithful, I would, if they were like friends of mine, I'd say, look, come both of you, come up, have a chat with me, and say, if you do you really want the relationship to carry on, girl? If she says yes, fine. And I'd ask the two of them to do a forgiveness ceremony in front of me or someone else they respect. And a forgiveness ceremony is saying to that person, you've hurt, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I know I've hurt you, this is what I've done, but please, I shouldn't have done this. I really have made a big mistake, please forgive me. And the husband should all say, I forgive you. Forgiveness is one of the most beautiful emotional acts. When I've witnessed those wonderful acts of forgiveness, I cry. It's beautiful, it's spiritual. It's one of the most wonderful, better than the sunset. So when I see those acts of forgiveness, it just takes relationships, love, to, again, a much higher level. I forgive you. And then, big embrace. Now, it doesn't finish there. Now, how can we have strategies so this never ever happens again? It's not say, okay, I forgive, back to normal again. It can never be back to normal. Now, I've had a weakness there. Now, is it because, husband, you haven't been paying me enough attention? Or, you know, that there's somehow a relationship has sort of dried up? So find out why. Why you want to do that in the first place? You know, break up a marriage. And find strategies so you don't get reinfected with what causes a breakup of a good relationship. And you work out strategies together. It's not your family member's problem. It's our problem, the husband and the wife. So he can't blame her. She can't blame herself. She can't blame him. The blame lies with both of them. It's always our problem. And they find a solution. So forgiveness, finding a good strategy, and growing from it, learning from it. There's one of my other shit stories, which is really popular. Whenever you go through stuff like that, it is stepping in the dog shit. And the saying is, when you step in the dog shit, you must never scrape it off your shoes. You must always take the dog shit home with you. Only scrape it off when you get to the garden. If you haven't got a garden, you live in an apartment in Hong Kong, in the public garden, underneath a mango tree or an apple tree. Because if you scrape it off under a mango tree, 1 year later, your mangoes are going to be sweeter and juicier than ever before. But when you eat that mango 1 year later, you must always remember what you're really eating. You're eating dog shit, transformed into sweet, juicy mango. So you say, yeah, this, you're in shit, sister, whatever it is. But you learn from that, you grow from that. And if you use this wisely, 1 year later, your relationship with your husband will be sweeter than ever it's been before.
I know that because I've done that many times with couples who've been unfaithful. Remember this one wife, she found these credit card receipts from her husband who'd been visiting a brothel. And that just, unfaithful with prostitutes? Why did you do that? So they came to me together, counseled them, and got him to ask forgiveness of his wife sincerely. And he was sincere. That was about 4 or 5 years ago. They have a wonderful relationship together now. They come every week to offer food to my monastery out of gratitude for saving their marriage. They're not just saving it, not just taking it back to normal, taking it to a much higher level. They went through such pain together. And they worked it out together. They grew together. They were a sweet mango tree couple because of the ship of his infidelity. And that's what happens. It's not theory, it's how to deal with it. This is being recorded, so get a copy of this recording and give it to your family member.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay.
Is there anybody else? Well, with the time that we have, I'm very sure you would share the same feeling with me that today we have learned so much more again as usual. And be that we choose to be the chicken farmer who choose to collect eggs or the other thing. Anyway.
Oh, come on, say it. Come on, say it. Because the Buddha said, listen, I know my Buddhism. He said in the sutras and in the Vinaya, monks, you should always teach in the local language.
For now, I have one person that I would like to introduce to you that without this person, this would never happen in cafe. May I please introduce my best friend, Suri, please. With all the help of all of our colleagues here, Thai and also everybody, as well as the team who brought Ajahn Brown, may I introduce you, please, Kelly, Katie, Annie,
and Andrew.
Annie, yes. I'd like to thank Ajahn Brown.
And a big round of applause for our lovely MC. But you can't tell me the truth, you know, I won't punish you. It is the truth.
We'll see you next
year. Very good. The conditions, if your karma is right. Yeah, okay, I've already promised.
Can I please again ask your help to join me, thank Ajahn Brown, with a big round of applause, please.